Y'all can grab a seat, and as you do, you're looking up here and saying, you're not Matt, and that's correct. My name is Todd Berkey. I am one of the pastors here at Grace. I typically work with our young adult ministry, so that is, think of single grad students and young professionals, and so if you are in that demographic or you know somebody in that demographic who is trying to figure out what does it look like to walk well with Jesus, is there anybody like me out there, tell them, yeah, at Grace, there's a ministry called Junction. We would love to have them join in with us here on Thursday nights. That's why you came this morning, was for a plug for Junction. I know. That was it. Hey, we're starting a series, though, this summer. All campuses are going through the book of Proverbs. And as I was thinking about this, I actually have really great parents. They're here. They're back over yonder, so you can take this up with them later on. But I really do. I have great parents. Both mom and dad love me well. They encourage me well. They implant wisdom and they give freedom. Like, they just did a great job through every stage of life. And that's just a blessing. I know that's not true for everybody, but I'm really fortunate with that. And I remember the time, though, my dad, it was like this movie moment. Like, I knew this was a big moment in life. They were living in Memphis, Tennessee. I was in my early 20s. I was in visiting them. He had just gotten home from work. He was sitting on the stairs. Behind me is the front door. It was open. There's a storm door, so the light is coming in. It's the golden hour when the light is just perfect. I remember the moment because my dad said something along the lines of, I want to tell you keys of wisdom for life. Like, oh, this is a moment. And so he just views things a little differently. He does. And I get excited, just so you know. I get excited. I wander a lot. I apologize. But that's just who I am. So he tells me, these are the keys, the wisdom. Here it is. And the first one that he says is this. He says, always be prepared. And I'm thinking, that's the Boy Scouts, I think. I wasn't in the Boy Scouts, but I think that's what it is. But here's where his different take is on that. He's like, you just never know. Your car might break down sometime, or you might have to wait for people, and you don't want to be bored. So have like a tennis ball or a frisbee with you, maybe a snack. I'm like, oh, okay, thanks, Dad. That's great. Number two, I'm like, all right, I wonder where this is going. Your fingernails and toenails, always keep them trimmed. I'm like, oh, wow, these are life-changing pieces of wisdom. They're doing good today. That's great. I'm like, oh, okay. He's like, because when they get long, it's just kind of annoying. You can't do things. I'm like, oh, to each their own. Number three. Now, I apologize. These are his words, not mine. I apologize. Number three is people are stupid. And I was like, whoa, okay. And actually, this was really profound because then he says, and you are people too. And then he goes on to explain, he's like, so if you're at Walmart, let's say, and you're three people deep, and somebody is up there, they're negotiating over a wiffle ball and a wiffle bat that somehow got separated, they were no longer a set, and somebody's up there saying, can you give me 10% off? Because you can't resell this. You're trying to negotiate, and you're getting frustrated. Just remember, people are stupid, and at times, Todd, that's you up negotiating for that separated baseball bat and wiffle ball. Or people are maybe trying to get exact change out at HEB, and you're like, oh, I'm getting really frustrated. Or people just do something, cut you off in traffic or say something mean. People are stupid, and you are people too. And I'm like, that's just really profound. And then I also thought, why did he say you are people too and not we are people? So, you know, I don't know what to really do with that, but okay, there's that. And you're like, why are you telling me this, other than those are great words of wisdom to live by, at least some of them, is simply this, that good dads, good parents really give wisdom so their children can live the best life. Good dads give wisdom so their children can live the best life. And that's important for us to know as we're coming into the book of Proverbs, because the book of Proverbs is all about a father writing words of wisdom to a son, and he desires the best life for his child. Good dads give wisdom to their children, give wisdom so their children can live the best life. And as I was thinking about this, we just wrapped up a series on prayer, right? And you remember back in Matthew chapter 5, verse 9, the disciples were like, hey, Jesus, you know, tell us how to pray. And Jesus says one of the most shocking things. Most of us, we're just so familiar with it, we don't realize how shocking it is. He says, what does he say? He says, okay, our Father. That's shocking. That's incredibly shocking. Up to that time, it was always Lord, God, you know, you on high. Never this, our Father. There's this relationship. And so God is our Father, but he's not just our Father. He's a good Father. We know that. If you look during the rich young ruler, this young man, he comes running up to Jesus and says, good teacher, I've just got to ask you a question. And Jesus' response is, why do you call me good? There is nobody good but God alone. So God is our Father. He is a good Father. But even more than that, this good Father, you need to know this. This good Father desires great life for all of us. In John 10:10, he's talking and he mentions the thief comes to steal, kill, and destroy. But I have come. I have come so that you may have life abundantly. And you might be sitting there going, okay, Todd, it's on Proverbs. You haven't even opened Proverbs yet. We're getting a little annoyed. Lunch is starting to, like, we need it. We're going to get there. I just don't want us to miss this. As we're looking at Proverbs as a whole summer-long thing, I don't want us to miss this. Every week when we are coming together looking at Proverbs, you need to know you have a very good Father who desires the best for you. He desires that. Some of us don't know God that way. Some of us think he's just a killjoy. He's just looking to take things away. That's not his intent. You need to know we have a good Father who truly desires the best life for you. Now, let me qualify here. Best life does not mean that you're not going to have tragedy. It doesn't mean that you're going to be missing out on any illnesses. It doesn't mean that you won't get laid off. It doesn't mean that people won't break up. It doesn't mean that people aren't going to offend you. We live in a broken world. We're going to all run into those things. The best life, though, walking in his wisdom, the best life is there's peace and there's hope and there's joy. There's purpose. There's nearness all the way through that. And so our good Father is always inviting us into the best life. And the book of Proverbs is a whole bunch of practical steps, practical ways to embrace that best life that he is offering to us. Now, one thing about Proverbs before we dive on in here into our text for the day is this. A proverb, you need to know, it's condensed, it's short. They're not going to be these long, chapter-long things going on. They're very short. They're memorable. As a dog returns to its vomit, so a fool repeats its folly, right? Like, that's memorable. A dog throwing up. Like, okay, that's gross. That's nasty. So a fool repeats his folly. As weird and gross as what that is, so do fools continue to repeat the same mistake over and over and over and over again. So they're memorable. They're very practical. Stop doing the same thing over and over and over again. And the other thing I think it's important for us to know that all the way through these are principles. These are not promises. Sometimes people will sit there and they'll tell me, Todd, in Proverbs chapter 12, 21, it says that no harm happens to the righteous, but the wicked are filled with trouble. And man, I just must not be righteous because somebody broke up with me or somebody did something hurtful to me. And I'm like, no. These are principles because we know Job was a righteous person and yet he ran into some really tough times. We know that Jesus was fully righteous and he suffered as well. And so these are principles. Typically, this is how things go. So typically, if you treat people fairly, kindly, with a servant's attitude, typically, things are going to go okay for you in relationships, but not always. So they're principles, they're not promises. They're just practical ways to navigate life in the best way possible. But there's something that he wants us to know at the very beginning of Proverbs, and we're going to be in Proverbs chapter 1, verses 1 through 7. At the very beginning, he's going to say there's something needed for these Proverbs to really impact our life. And so join with me. I'm going to read Proverbs chapter 1, verses 1 through 7. Here we go. The Proverbs of Solomon, the son of David, king of Israel, to know wisdom and instruction, to discern the sayings of understanding, to receive instruction in wise behavior, in righteousness, justice, and integrity, to give prudence to the naive or the simple ones, to the youth knowledge and discretion. A wise person will hear and increase in learning, and a person of understanding will acquire wise counsel. To understand a proverb and a saying, the word of the wise and in the riddles, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, yet fools despise wisdom and instruction. I'm sure you guys caught that all the way through, repeated many times. What is needed? What's the secret to unlocking Proverbs and watching your life step into the best life? And that's wisdom. In chapter 1, verse 2, to know wisdom. Verse 3, to receive instruction in wise behavior. Verse 5, a wise person will hear an increase in learning. Verse 6, to understand a proverb and a saying, the word of the wise. Verse 7, fools despise wisdom. Wisdom, 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 all the way throughout. And so this is a power-packed little chunk of text that we are going to just blissfully skip through this morning. We don't have time. I did joke with the 9 o'clock service and said the 11 o'clock has no idea. We're going to be here for 5 hours. Diving into this, but don't worry, I'll keep an eye on the clock. We're going to just skip through this, pulling up a few things about wisdom. It's going to frame the rest of our time together. And we're going to look at basically three questions. Who needs wisdom? Who needs it? Then we're going to look at what is it? What is wisdom? And then how do we get it? Pretty simple outline all the way through. So let's dive in right away with, well, who needs wisdom. Proverbs chapter 1 here, verses 4 and 5. To give prudence to the naive, to the youth knowledge and discretion. A wise person will hear an increase in learning, and a person of understanding will acquire wise counsel. He's sitting there and saying, everyone. Everyone needs wisdom. So he does this. On this side, he says, okay, naive and youth. He said this, I didn't, so if you're young, I apologize. He just grouped those together. The naive and the youth are here. But on the other end of the spectrum, way down over here, are the wise and the understanding. Who needs wisdom? All the way at this end, all the way at that end, and everywhere all the way across. Every single one of us needs wisdom. And you're like, okay, yeah, I got that, Todd. That's fine, but I don't want you to miss this. If there's never a person who doesn't need wisdom, wisdom is not a static position to obtain. Wisdom is not a degree that you get. You get your degree from Texas A&M, and then all of a sudden, you go like, I am forever associated with Texas A&M. Wisdom is not like that. Wisdom is not a static position. It's not like I ran a half marathon, therefore I am a half marathon completer. I will always be that way. I'm always a finisher. No, wisdom is not like that. It's not a static position. Wisdom is a dynamic relationship. It's fluid. You can be wise one moment and a fool the next. You can be incredibly intelligent and be an absolute fool for either a season or for life. It is not what you are. You can set some habits, but it's not like I have now arrived, gold medal, I have become wise. It is constant, ongoing. It's a little bit like this. When I was young, and you can ask my mom how old I was because I don't remember, but I was really young. She got off a phone call, and she just said, Pat, that's her name. She said, Pat, you're so stupid. And little Todd comes running up, and he says, Mom, you're not stupid. You just do stupid things sometimes. And that's actually really good wisdom, right? Like, you're not stupid. You just sometimes do some dumb things. We all do. And just the same thing is, you can do wise things and foolish things, but there's no guarantee that you will always be wise because you may be the fool. You may choose to be the fool. So that makes me wonder a little bit then, what exactly does wisdom, what does that actually mean? What is it? And so when we look at the what with wisdom, usually people will come through and say, well, it's basically skillful living. And that's kind of, it's true. Our text is going to give us a little something different here to look at. We're going to expand on that. But today, in today's day and age, when you ask people, hey, what's wisdom? Most of the time, they're going to come back and say, well, it's intellectual knowledge. It's you have all of the right things in your mind. And then they might go, it's not just what you have in your mind, but you know how to apply it. That's wisdom. And you're kind of almost there, but you're not. In the ancient Near East, in biblical times, wisdom was had nothing to do with the quantity of information that you knew. You could have all of the wisdom in the world, or you could have all the smarts in the world and be a complete fool and never be viewed as wise. Because it had everything to do not just with knowing what to do, discerning how to apply it, but then actually applying it. That's wisdom. And so it's important for us to understand it is a skill. It's not this position that you've achieved. It's a skill. So we're going to see this definition of wisdom unfold here in our text here. But to work with it so you know where we're going, wisdom is the skill of knowing what to do, discerning when to do it, and a willingness to do it. It's the skill of knowing what to do, when to do it, and a willingness to do it. It seems pretty simple, but that's just how I roll, simply. How do we get this definition? Well, we see right away in Proverbs 1:2. No, there's a knowledge element to know wisdom and instruction. And know there again, this is great. There is an element that is mentally engaging. You learn things. You look and say, this is how this works. Okay, I understand. So there is an element of wisdom that does require us to engage our brains. So if we are intellectually wired, awesome. That's fantastic. You get to learn all of this knowledge. That's not wisdom, but it's a portion of wisdom because there's discernment that comes in here. To discern the sayings of understanding here. Now, discernment is, basically how does stuff work in the real world? A couple years ago, my wife and I, we took a team to Central Asia for a mission trip. Long journey. We're tired. We get to this camp that we're working with people from all over the region. It was truly incredible. And we all had sleeping arrangements that were, let's just say I'm a glamper. I'm not a camper. So we had no air conditioning. We had no cross ventilation. It was hot. You had to walk a long way for the toilet. There were wild animals. Like, I don't know what happened our first night that we were there. So people just didn't get a whole lot of sleep at this camp. But awesomely, at about 5:30 in the morning, our door flings open to our bungalow, not a bungalow, but a bungalow. And there's this kid who says something that I think is good morning or get up or something, and he has a cowbell. And so he's saying whatever he's saying. I have no idea because I don't speak the language. I don't know who the kid is. And he's ringing the cowbell. For the few hours of sleep that I had, I was like, whoa, 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 kid. Proverbs 27:14, one who blesses his friend with a loud voice early in the morning, it will be considered a curse on him. He had no discernment of what early was. For him, early might have been 5:30, might have been like 4:30. For us, it might have been more like 10 because we were tired. He had to learn discernment all the way through. He only, though, did it the first morning because from every bungalow that he went to, and for every room he went to, he just didn't get really a welcomed, warm, like, thank you. Now, he got to ring the bell further the rest of the week, just not at that time, because he, at that time, lacked discernment, but he grew in it. And the third component is a willingness here. Now, this one comes from to receive instruction in wise behavior. The word receive is simply to embrace, to accept either a gift or a way of thinking. And so that is like, I think A, you think B, you're right, I will embrace your way of thinking. I am willing to go ahead and take that. So wisdom, as you think through, same with our ringing bell boy, he could have rejected. He could have said, okay, early morning, it's a curse. Okay, early morning for other people is not 5:30, it's more like 8. So I'll wait till 8, but you know what? Who cares? I'm going to do what I want to do. No, he exercised wisdom by saying, I am willing to honor what I know. It's this attitude of just dependence, of trust, belief in action, if you will. So again, wisdom, what is it? It's a skill of knowing what to do, discerning when to do it, and a willingness to do it. A couple of examples, because I sometimes over-explain things because I'm slow. You've probably already got this, but let me take this to my bathroom. We have a clock. It's amazing. It tells time. It's an analog one, so you know, there it is. I know that clock requires one AA battery to work. I know that. Now, that clock recently all of a sudden became right only 2 times a day. Now, I was totally unaware of the fact. I was just going about my business. And Erin, my wife, finally said, hey, I think the clock isn't working. So see, I had knowledge. I know what's wrong with the clock. It needs a new battery. But I didn't have any discernment. I wasn't aware. So I was a fool. And you're going to see with this threefold definition, there's a lot of opportunities to be a fool. So I know how to fix it, but I'm not even aware of it. I'm a fool. Move forward if like, okay, now I'm aware of it. Oh, the clock, you're right. It is only twice a day. Okay, well, it needs a AA battery. Yep. Man, they're all the way downstairs. I mean, it's a long way to go. And not only that, we've got kids and they like to play video games and their controllers take, guess what? AA batteries. And so most of the time when I go looking for them, they're not there. So if I'm really going to go get it, if I'm committed, I have to drive to the store. You know what? I'm not willing to do that. Fool. I know what to do. I know there's a problem, but I'm unwilling to act on it. I'm being foolish. Wisdom is, I know what's wrong. I see. I know how to fix it. I know it's wrong. And then I'm going to go ahead and I'm willing to pay the price. So let me move from a clock, though, to people. My wife, Erin, and I, we like TV shows every now and then and movies, and it's wonderful and amazing. But listen, I know that Erin is made in the image of God. I know that Erin is to be valued highly. I know that as her husband, I am to sacrificially love and serve her and protect her. I know this. I know that. So I'm like, all right, I understand Erin. Now, what I may not realize is we've only been watching action movies. Action movie, action movie, action movie. And so I'm totally unaware that she likes a more of a variety. Guess what? I'm a fool. I might know her high value, but I'm totally unaware that I'm being selfish in our choices of movies. I'm a fool. Move forward to the next step. Oh, I actually realized that I've been pretty selfish with action movies, but a rom-com, I mean, Hallmark, I mean, how much hot cocoa can you have? How many different festivals can they make it up from a corn festival, an apple festival, a fig festival? I mean, and who knew that he was a prince? I mean, I didn't know that it was a prince who was there. It's a shocker. Like, how many of those things can you do? And it's just like, oh, that's just, no, I'm unwilling. I'm just unwilling to watch a rom-com. I'm a fool. Even if I know my wife is this incredible, beautiful, made in the image of God person who's been entrusted to me that I'm to love and to serve, and I even realize that I'm being selfish in an area, but I say I'm unwilling to, I am the fool. One other little illustration here, same thing. Let's just say that I realize that Erin, I can see she's grumpy. I can see like, oh man, like, you want to watch a movie and you're scowling at me like, oh, you know what? I think we've probably been watching a lot of action movies. I perceive that you might be frustrated by that. And so, okay, we'll watch a rom-com. That's fine, whatever. But if I don't know her value, what happens? Why am I doing this? This is so lame. This is the worst movie ever. I grow bitter all because I don't know her value. All because I don't understand my role. I don't understand the responsibility. I don't understand sacrificial love. And so, fool, fool, fool. There are so many different ways for us to be a fool. Wisdom is, I know her value. I can see where I've been selfish. And I'm willing to go ahead and sacrifice. And let's watch the rom-com. And afterwards, let me go ahead and dialogue. Like, yeah, I mean, that should be an Academy Award. They just was incredible how they acted all the way through there. It was amazing. That's what wisdom is. You need all three of those things for wisdom. It is a skill of knowing what to do, discerning when to do it, and a willingness to do it. And I just want to mention something before we move on here, and it's just this idea, like, why does it work? Like, why does acting wisely, really, why does it work? And well, it's pretty simple. In Proverbs chapter 3:19, we read that by wisdom, the Lord laid the foundation of the earth. He established the heavens by understanding. In Proverbs 8:27, when he, that's God, established the heaven, I, that's wisdom is speaking, I was there. Psalm 104:24, the Lord, how many are your works? How many are they? In wisdom, you have made them all. The earth is full of your possessions. God designed things with wisdom. There is a way that it is supposed to work. And when we act with God's wisdom, that's the best life. But what sneaky young adults will say sometimes is, but we live in a broken world. So how is God's wisdom really best when the whole world is broken? Thinking that now they've figured out a loophole how to not act with wisdom. And that's a great question, because we do have to acknowledge the world is broken, and yet God's wisdom is still the best way. I'm not going to go on this very long. I'll just simply say this, that sin did not eradicate God's wisdom, nor God's purpose, nor God's design. Sin did not do that. It broke everything, but it did not eradicate God's wisdom, his purpose, or his design. In James chapter 3, we did James not that long ago, right? James is talking and said, this is just confusing that you would use your tongue, your mouth, and you would speak these great high praises of who God is, and then with it, you would curse man who's made in his image. Well, those people that you're cursing, there's brokenness that's there, but yet they're still retaining the image of God because sin did not eradicate God's purpose or his wisdom or his design. So Solomon sits there and says, it's still, everything has this natural pull, if you will, to move towards wisdom. And you see this, it's a really easy thing to see this natural pull that's in the world to move towards God's wisdom. If I talk to anybody, I can start off and say, hey, have you ever noticed, like, doesn't the world just seem broken? Doesn't it just seem like things don't operate the way they are? There was this pandemic that went on. There's people who are doing fraudulent things and stealing money that they shouldn't be stealing because it's stealing and it's wrong. You've got people who are just being self-centered. There's murder. There's disappointment. You got storms that come through. Like, it just, doesn't it seem like the world is broken? And people are like, yeah, world's broken. And as you continue to talk with them, you can begin to ask, like, don't you think, though, like, we're broken too? And they'll look like, what do you mean? I was like, well, you know, it doesn't always seem like we just want more. And so we start thinking, if I just had this amount of money, then. And we work really hard and we get that amount of money. We're like, I've made it, and yet we're still empty. Well, if I just had this title, then. And we get the title, and we're like, yeah, but I'm still empty. Well, if I was just married, then, and we get married, we're like, this is great, but eventually it still doesn't complete me. Well, then if we have kids, the kids will fix the whole solution, and we go around, and we're like, what is wrong? All of these things are not fixing whatever is wrong with me. It's because sin did not eradicate our design and our purpose, and our purpose and our design in life is to image God. It is he and he alone that fills us, none of the other things. Even though we are broken people, even though we live in a broken world that has been marred by sin, God's purpose, his design, and his wisdom were not eradicated by sin. And Solomon knows this because he says that, man, living this way makes wisdom sometimes elusive. In Proverbs chapter 16:25, he writes this, there is a way that seems right to a person, but its end is death. And Solomon's just going like, yeah, you're going to have these natural impulses, these natural urges, but they're probably not pointing towards wisdom. They're probably not sitting there and pointing to this is how God thinks and this is how God acts. It's probably not great knowledge, not great discernment, and not really centered around who he is. So how do we get this wisdom if it doesn't come naturally? If our natural impulses are only ways of death, how do we actually get wisdom? And he's going to answer this here in Proverbs 1:7. We gain the wisdom by returning things to their proper position. Now bear with me with this. We gain wisdom by returning things to their proper position. In 1:7, this is what he says. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Fools despise wisdom and instruction. Now it starts off, the first word there is actually the Lord. It's not fear isn't the first thing, it's the Lord, because the Lord has preeminence. And his name is Yahweh. And if you're not familiar with Yahweh, when Moses is sitting there and saying, you want me to go set your people free, God? Like, I don't understand. Who do I say sent me? He says, Yahweh. I'm the God who delivers. I'm the God who's going to take my people out of a harsh situation. I'm going to move them out. I'm going to care for them. I've divided seas. I'm going to care for them all the way through the wilderness. And I have a purpose and a plan and a desire to bring them into Canaan. I am Yahweh. I am the God who makes covenants with humanity because that's me. I'm sitting there saying, I will love you. I will pursue you. I will be faithful to you because I am Yahweh. That God is the one that we are to fear. Now that word fear, we're like, I don't know what to do with that word. It seems weird. It does seem weird because there's a lot going on in the word fear. There is the thing of fear that's like, oh my goodness, I know that is other than I am. I don't belong here. And I think judgment might be coming my way. Yikes. That's an element of fear. Another element of fear is I know that I'm not like him, and he is so much more beautiful, so much more amazing, so much stronger than I am. I'm just in awe of who he is. And then there's the element of fear that is just general respect for folks who are in authority. And when you put all of those things together, that's what's going on here. He's saying, long story short, stand in awe at our faithful God. Stand in awe at our faithful God. Acknowledge, put him in his right position. Acknowledge that this life, this world is about him and his glory. And that he actually desires the best for us. Put him in the right position. How do we know that is the right position? Because if you were to go back in the garden, that's exactly what you would see. You see God creating, right? He's creating things. He's creating this space for humanity to come into, and he's giving them commands, and he's giving them directions of how to live best. And there he is. He's walking with them. They're getting to know him, and so humanity is sitting there, and they're created going, man, God, you did all this. This is incredible. You're awesome, and we are dependent upon you. You tell us not to eat, okay, not eat. You tell us to care for this place, okay, we're going to care for this place. They are wise, actually, right? If wisdom is knowing, discerning, and willing, if those are the parts of it, they've been created. God is walking with them. They're getting to know God. They're discerning when he says, hey, okay, this fruit, bad. The rest of the fruit, good. Bad, good. And they're able to go like, got it. I understand no to this, yes to this. And then they were willing. We don't know. We're so accustomed with that story. We have no idea how long it was from them to go, okay, don't eat of that tree. Was it 6 seconds? Was it 60 minutes? Was it 60 years? We don't know how long it was, but for a time period, they were willing to follow and trust. They had the Lord in the right position. And then what happens? The fool, the biggest fool, shows up and says, did God really say you shouldn't eat of the fruit? Like, and then he's like, yeah, you're not going to die if you eat it. God knows that the day you eat from it, your eyes are going to be opened. You will become like God, knowing good and evil on your own. You won't need to be in dependence with him. You don't have to trust him. You can figure it out on your own. And so what you see is what goes on today. God created in the right position is it is all about him with a focus on eternity. This is wisdom, proper position. God, you are great. God, you know best. God, I trust you. You tell me that eternity matters more than anything else. I trust you. I will make decisions in light of eternity. On this end, though, you have foolishness. You have the big fool who says, no. Listen, it's about you. Certainly you won't die. You need to have your eyes open so that right now you can go ahead and be like him. You can know good and evil on your own. You don't need to have dependence. And so you have these two kingdoms. You've got down here wisdom, God and eternity. You've got foolishness down here that is me and now. Which is driving your life? Proper position has wisdom down here where we are looking to him alone and with eternity in view alone. Foolishness is all about me and now. And that's why, again, Solomon says, we are born right here because when Adam and Eve sinned, that brokenness was passed on, like physical traits. At the end, grab a picture of my dad and myself. You want to know what I'm going to look like a few years down the road? It's him. It's like a spitting image. We were born as I inherited his physical traits. We've inherited that self-centeredness, that now-ness, foolishness. And that's why Solomon says there's a way that just naturally feels right. It's going to seem like it's the right thing to do, but it is the way that leads to death. That's why it's hard to find these things. I was running yesterday, or actually at my age now, jogging or like fast walking and moving my arms with the appearance of something. I mean, I was out for a stroll. We'll do that. And I've got a son who's a senior in high school, and so I was going by Consolidated School, and I noticed there's all these people painting, right? They're painting. I'm like, what the heck are they painting? I look a little closer, and the seniors, you can buy a parking spot, and you can design the parking spot with whatever you want. It's your spot for your whole senior year, because this is it. This is the moment that you've been waiting for. And so people design all these intricate things, like, look at my parking spot. Look at the beauty of it. He hasn't graduated. The seniors don't have diplomas in hand yet. And all that they were living for was that moment, and it's just painted over. In an instant, what seemed like it was an eternity away is now history for my child. I didn't tell him this. We went to a football game, the maroon and white game for the high schoolers on Friday night. And what I wanted to say was like, hey, Paxton, how does it feel to be like a back in the day guy now? Because you've passed your glory days. Like back in my day, this is what we did in high school. How does it feel to be old now? Because life is quick, and the question is, are we going to live in wisdom with God and eternity in view, or are we going to live the fool's way, which is all about me and now? And the book of Proverbs is all this encouragement of come to the way of wisdom. Come be wise. Know the right thing. Discern and be willing to follow. The truth is this, that neither you or I could figure out how to get out of this self-centered place. And that's why Christ came. Christ lived wisdom perfectly. He knew God perfectly. And you look in John all the way throughout, and Jesus will say things like, man, I don't say anything unless it's something I hear the Father saying. I don't do anything unless it's something I see the Father doing. I know the Father. I'm always looking to the Father. I know what to do. He had discernment. He knew at times like, hey, my time has not yet come. You guys aren't going to kill me because I know the Father. I trust the Father. I can see the times. It's not yet. And then when the time came for him to die a brutal death, you see a willingness there. What does he say? Should I pray, Father, save me from this hour? He says, no. This is the whole reason I came. The whole reason I came was to be the sacrifice, to be able to bring humanity and God back together. That's my purpose. That's what he desires, and I'm willing to do it. Father, glorify your name. And God responds, I have. And Jesus' work there is beautiful because between you and I, we were born broken, separated in this selfish end down here. That's all that we knew. And Jesus came and said, I am the wisdom of God. Paul calls him that in Corinthians chapter 1. He's the wisdom of God. He lives wisely all the way through, dies on a cross, paying the price that it takes to bring me back to him, to bring you back to him, to be in a relationship with him. Now, I know that most of us, we hear that, and we think one of three things. We either go like, that's the best story ever. It's amazing. God, I can't believe you would do that. Oh, it's so cool. Or we go, I've been in church. I've heard the gospel before. Whatever. Move on. Or we sit there and we go like, well, whatever. I think I'm okay. I don't need him. I don't know how you're sitting there if you're mesmerized by the beauty of what Christ has done for you. I don't know if you were moved to this place to go like, wow, he lived wisdom. He's inviting me into wisdom for this best life. Because as parking spots get painted over, our lives are going to be gone like this. And here's the reality for my son, Paxton. His best days, his glory days are not behind him. They're ahead of him. Even when he gets out of college, his glory days are not behind him. They're ahead of him. For me, I turned 50 this year. My glory days are not behind me. They're ahead of me. For my parents, their glory days are not behind them. They're ahead of them because we are living for eternity. We're not living for here and now, and therefore we should be excited and want to live in wisdom to reflect the image of God because that is why we are here. So as we wrap up, we've covered just a ton of things. There's one last little nugget, and you're like, just be done, Todd, and I will. But Solomon wrote this, had incredible knowledge, knew a lot of things, and he lived with great wisdom until he got old, right? 1 Kings chapter 11, verse 4, when Solomon was old, his wives turned his heart away to follow other gods, and his heart was not wholly devoted to the Lord as his God, as the heart of his father David had been. Solomon, as he got older and older, he had the knowledge. He decided for whatever reason not to apply it and begin to marry more and more and more and follow their gods. And so he has a son. Son's name is Rehoboam. Rehoboam has his dad who's telling him, this is how you should live. And Rehoboam is watching, how are you actually living, dad? What does Rehoboam do when he becomes king? He has this moment, all of Israel gathers around, they said, hey, we will follow you, Rehoboam. You are the next king. Would you just be a little nicer to us? And Rehoboam says, well, I'll get back to you. And so Rehoboam goes and talks to his father's advisors and say, hey, what should I do in this? And what do they say? They're like, listen to him. They will follow you. And he's like, you know what? That'll make me look weak. That'll make me look weak here and now. I don't want to do that. Let me find some people who will go ahead and be all about me and now. Oh, you tell them you're going to be harsh. So he comes back and says, I'm going to be harsh. He ignores wisdom, says me and now, goes with the world's wisdom. And what happens? The kingdom splits. Point is simply this. Information alone is not going to have us live the best life ever. Parents, your kids are watching not just what you say, but what you do. Children, your classmates, your friends are watching what you do a lot more than what you say. And so this invitation into wisdom to sit there and say, we are going to go, God in eternity, I'm going to live that way. I'm going to know him. I'm going to live with discernment, and I'm going to have a willingness to follow him. When that's all together, people both hear and see wisdom lived out, and that is awesome. And I don't say any of that to guilt or shame you because all of us have messed up. All of us don't walk in wisdom at all times. But the fool just says, I will return to the vomit and do it again and again and again and again. I want to encourage you, don't be a fool. We skip through a lot of stuff. As we wrap up, we've got a loving father who's inviting his children to live the best life possible. It's all surrounding wisdom. We looked at wisdom. Who needs it? All of us. What is it? It's to know what to do, discern when to do it, and a willingness to go ahead and do it. And how do we gain it? We put God back in the right position, and we come back and we say, you're in charge, not I. Application here, I want to encourage you. This week, where do you want to grow? How do you want to grow in wisdom? Since it's not a static position, is there something about God that you just don't know too much about? You want to learn something more about him? Or maybe you're sitting there and you're like, I know quite a bit about God, and it seems like I never have anybody around me to share the gospel with, as if every person you ever bump into is near God. Maybe you need discernment. So maybe this week you want to sit there and say, Lord, this whole week, give me eyes to see people in situations as you do. Or maybe you're here and you're like, I actually know where I'm just saying, I'm not changing the AA battery. I refuse. And maybe willingness is what it is. God is like, no, man, you need to forgive, or you need to ask for forgiveness. I don't know where it is, but I want to invite you this week, grow in wisdom, whether it's getting to know more of who he is, whether it is having eyes to see as he sees, or a willingness to follow wherever he leads. Let's pray. God, thank you for this day that you've given us, Lord. You've given us your word, which is incredible. You've given us the book of Proverbs with this beautiful invitation to live the best life, Father. I know that our temptation is to always drift back to this side of the stage that is me and now, Lord. I pray that we'd be very aware of that. Father, I pray for me this week. I pray that I would have discerning eyes. I pray, Lord, I would not just go from putting out fire to fire, running and being reactive to everything, Lord, but I pray that I would be proactive. I would see people and situations always through your lens. That I'd be willing to bring peace, that I'd be willing to share who you are with others. And Father, each of the people who are in this room, I pray that you would work in their lives to nudge them, whether it is taking the first step and putting you back in the right position. The God that rules all, that we stand in awe of. Or whether it is going, you know what? I just need the courage and the strength to be willing to follow you. Wherever we are, Lord, I pray that you would nudge us. I trust that you'll nudge us however you want. We absolutely love you. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.